Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Well, time to get some popcorn and a soda and grab a seat, even though we're not going to see a movie. We are going to talk about the magic of movie theaters and a person who helps us to remember them. My guest today is photographer, educator, and creative explorer, Benita Van Winkle, who, in addition to being a college professor of art, uses her free time to photograph and document a vanishing breed. That is, old cinema theaters that are facing an uncertain future. For everything about Benita, go to busybstudio.com. That's busybstudio.com. And Benita, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm delighted to talk with you because that's a subject that's one of those things that, you know, you think people don't care about, but they do. And I thought, you know, you're doing something really great. And I wanted to talk to you about it. But first, with your last name, Van Winkle, you could wake up after 20 years to find no theaters.
I could.
This could happen. So how did you get started in that whole world of, you know, I should take pictures of theaters before they're all gone? Some of them may be gone. Even if they're not gone, they're beautiful theaters. How did you get started on that road?
I had a school assignment. There's how a great thing start, isn't it? I had a school assignment to photograph in a dark place. And the darkest place I could think of was my local movie theater at home. I had to drive 4 hours back home to go get it, to get in there. But I knew the guy that ran the theater because I had worked at the bank next door. He let me come in. I had thought it was a magical place. And it was a very odd place. The outside had a three-dimensional marquee that was about the Caribbean islands. And it had like a little outline of Florida. And then it had a mermaid that was riding on a turtle and a porpoise and a flamingo and all this other stuff there that were three-dimensional. And then, but the inside was, it was Egyptian figures telling the story of sound. I don't have a clue why. It made no sense whatsoever. I've been in other theaters that made no sense with the inside, but I thought it was magical. So that's how I got started shooting theaters. But I was just doing it for my school assignment. And then 2 years later, the bank was torn down. I mean, the theater was torn down to build a parking lot for the bank. And that broke my heart.
Yeah,
I thought, oh well, you know, maybe these theaters aren't going to be around forever. Maybe I should start photographing them. And it was very haphazard at first. I would see a theater and I would pull over and take a picture, and then I wasn't doing research. And then all of a sudden, I really noticed them disappearing. And I got to graduate school, and they asked me the first week, "What's your project?" I was a little surprised. I had been a photojournalist at that point for several years, and I didn't realize I had to have a whole project just for and so I just said movie theaters, and my other colleagues in school were photographing very, very serious projects, such as abortion rights and gun laws and adding hormones to food and feminist issues, and I was photographing movie theaters.
But I'm sorry, that's serious too.
It is. But, you know, it wasn't exactly looked at as real research when I was in school.
You mentioned earlier it was your local theater, but then you said you had to travel for hours to get there. So that means you were going to college.
I was going to school at Daytona Beach Community College. And,
okay.
And I went there, which was across the state, because I grew up in Largo, Clearwater, Florida. And that was on one side of the state. And Daytona was, of course, on the other side of the state. And I went there because I could get a 2-year degree in professional photography, and it was the best choice that I ever made. My parents didn't think so at the time, but because they were sure that I was making a mistake. But I really knew I wanted to be a photographer, and that ended up paying for all of the rest of my college, because I became a professional photographer. And from that point on, I made my living as a photographer, and that I worked full time while I was going to school the rest of my degrees.
I didn't mention it in the opening, but I'll mention it now because I do like to give credit. How I found out about you, there was an article in AARP magazine, and I was so interested in the whole concept of what you were doing. I thought, you know, you'd be great to come on Ira's Everything Bagel to talk about what you've been doing. And I imagine there's a part of you that gets disappointed when a theater you've taken a picture of and documented goes away, but then at least you have what you've preserved. So in a way, it's bittersweet. It's gone, but you're one of the few people that have preserved it in a way.
One of my former students sent me an email. This is how well I can remember this. 2 years ago in January, and said that the Fourth Avenue Theater in Anchorage, Alaska had just been torn down. And I was like, because it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. But it was in a downtown area. It was being used for a banquet hall at that point, and then some events. It had, you know, I guess they just thought it had outgrown its usefulness. Although I contend that those theaters, so many of them are used for other things now, mm-hmm. plays and conference centers. They can really just be reused, you know,
and repurposed into other things.
Right, refurbished and renovated and used by the community in a different way. And they don't quite fulfill the same role in the community, but they do bring people together.
The theater in Largo, Florida, is it the Carib?
Well, it was in Clearwater. I grew up in Largo, and we had a Kwanzai Hut theater in Largo that had a metal roof. And if you went while it was raining, you couldn't hear what the movie was. But in Clearwater was the Carib. And there was two. There was the Carib and there was the Capitol.
And when you go to film these, or not film, but well, I guess film, photograph these theaters, you talk to locals to get a sense of the theater itself. Do you also try to talk to people that are either at the community college or university in the area, or perhaps the library, who may have background material on the theater?
I do later. I don't generally contact them first. Honestly, it takes me hours upon hours upon hours to map out a trip, because I am researching every small town that I can get to. And I don't stay on an interstate. I am on the back roads, and then I'm trying to figure out are there any movie theaters left? Where are the movie theaters? How do I get from point A to point B? How can I not backtrack? I don't want to backtrack because I'm going. And a lot of times on most of the trips that I go on, I'm driving the whole time, or somebody's driving. It's either me or my husband or my friends that are going with me. And I usually photograph somewhere between 65 and 90 theaters on a trip.
That's a lot.
It is.
So it must take you, I'm going to guess here, 6 months to plan one of these?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so with that many. But I could understand, because I've talked to people who are travelers, and they find that the more time you spend planning, it's so much easier, and you just then can go and do what you want to do and see what you want to see. So
the problem for me is that I never know if I'm going to get inside the theater or not. And it doesn't matter if I've called ahead or not, because sometimes that, and I can't tell them, like I can call ahead, but I can't say I'm going to be there on Thursday. Blah,
right.
Blah, blah.
You're right.
So I don't know how many I'm getting into before that. And I might be in one for 3 hours, and I might be standing in front of one for 5 minutes.
Right.
I don't. So it's next to impossible to map that out. Although I can get pretty close these days, and it's kind of a roll of the dice. Sometimes I pull up in front of a place, like I pulled up in front of a theater in I think it was Viroquois, Wisconsin. And it was early in the morning. It was a Monday morning. Theaters are never open on Monday morning because they've been open on the weekends. And this woman came down the sidewalk and she said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just looking. I was looking in the window, you know." And I said, "This seems like such a lovely theater." And she said, "Well, the manager's not here because he's off on Monday, but I can try to call him." And she tried to call him and she said, "No, I couldn't get a hold of him." And I said, "Well, that's okay. Thank you so much for trying." She had the business next door. And then she said, "Wait, let me try something else." And then she came out and she said, "He'll be here in a couple of minutes."
She didn't answer today.
She said, "He didn't answer today because he's off, but My husband plays golf with his husband, with his dad. And so I just called my husband and said, will you call his dad? And then he called his son, and then he's coming in to let you in.
That's hospitality.
It was so worth it. It was so worth it. It was so beautiful. It was a beautiful theater. They had renovated it. He was so genuinely kind and just generous with me to let my husband and I in and to spend time letting us take pictures.
The theater we just talked about, it's the Carib Theater in Clearwater, right?
It is.
And then some of the other theaters that you've covered and we can talk about is the Earl Theater, which is in Mount Airy, North Carolina, which sounds very familiar to those of us who remember a certain television series.
Right. Yeah, Mount Airy is Mayberry, right?
Yeah, and then there's the Lund Theater, and that's in, is it Vyborg?
Vyborg.
Mm-hmm. Vyborg. And the Palmetto Theater in Hampton, South Carolina.
Beautiful theater.
And the Michigan Theater in Detroit. Are all of these similar or totally different?
Oh, they're so different. They're so different. And the theater, the Lund Theater has maybe, oh, I don't know. There might be 800 people in the community. Maybe it's all run by volunteers. A family had owned that theater for years and years and years. I want to say it was over 40 years. And they finally decided they wanted to retire. And the town didn't want them to because it really is a town that's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
I mean, a beautiful nowhere, but gorgeous nowhere, but, you know, not close to a big city. And so they said, well, can you just let us run the theater? So they got together a community group and they run the theater with volunteers. And that particular picture, the volunteer that worked at the Ace Hardware that was across the street had come over with her little four-year-old. And as I stepped outside to make a photograph, her daughter leaned up against the window. And that's when I made the picture. But there's another one that shouldn't have been open because it was early in the morning. It was 8:30 in the morning. And I thought, well, I'll never get in anyway. And we pulled up thinking we would get some breakfast down at a little restaurant. There was a little restaurant in town. And when I opened the door, here was the sound from a movie coming on the street. And I was like, and my husband said, I'm going to get breakfast. See you later.
Do I get the slight suggestion that your husband is okay with your project, but not necessarily 100% involved? Would that be fair?
He has been my support system from the word go. We met the first day of when I went to graduate school, and he's just been my support system ever since then. And he doesn't want to be in the limelight. He doesn't want to be, you know, noticed. Although sometimes he does walk back and forth in front of the theater that I'm photographing, and I'm like, "Hello,
yeah, you know? Remember, I'm here for a reason."
No, he just does that to kid with me, but one time he was supposed to watch out for, because I had to lay down in the middle of the road to photograph this theater because there were trees up over it and it was blocking the architecture. So I said, and it was real early in the morning. It was like 7 o'clock in the morning. So I said, I'm just going to lay here in the middle of the road, but just block me in this little tiny town. Just block me and see if there's anybody coming. You can, you know, holler to me. Well, he saw the policeman walking up and he decided to just duck inside one of the little doorways there. And of course, the policeman comes up and goes, are you okay? And then my husband, and then I looked up at him and he's just over there laughing. I thought that was really funny.
Well, it is if it's not you, not happening to you. It's, you know, it's funny. It's only when it happens to you and it's not funny. The one thing I've noticed about theaters, and this may be a default position for me, but when I hear of theaters from the 30s and the 40s, some degree in the 50s, but mostly 30s and 40s. The architecture or the feeling is, to me, is more Art Deco than anything else. But I would imagine you see a wide variety of styles and design elements in the theaters that you cover.
Absolutely. There is everything from French Renaissance to Art Deco, modern streamline, very bland, you know, very, well, I'm saying bland. That's not really right. Very clean lines. And some of those are right around the 60s. And I really stopped. I had to draw a line where I was going to stop photographing at. And so I picked 1965, but it's sort of loose. But the reason I picked that is because that's when the big malls came into play. But what I was really looking at was architecture. I was looking for architecture that was unique and is, has personality, I guess, right. Really. Just has a personality.
And speaks to you in a way.
That's really what I look for. And interestingly enough, sometimes you can get to a building that looks sort of cracker box on the outside, if you will. And then you get on the inside and it's like, where am I? This is crazy. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever notice a dichotomy between what you experience visually on the inside and what you hear? So for example, maybe you went to one of those theaters after you took the picture to see a movie and the sound is awful or tinny or just not what it should be given the opulence or the look of the place.
You know, most of the theaters that I have been in are, and I'm just being honest, most of them have had amazing acoustics. They have a lot of sound baffling on the wall. This is interesting. I just photographed a little theater in Pennsylvania. Can't remember the name of it, but the name of the theater was The State. And they had started to renovate the theater. And a young man and his partner had bought it. And they started taking the sound baffling off the wall. You know, they were renovating. And behind it were paintings from the WPA period.
Man, that's the 40s. Yeah. Amazing. Works Progress Administration.
Right.
Under and Franklin Roosevelt's administration. Yeah. Amazing.
And so we had, they had taken it off, but of course, when I got there, there was a movie playing and he was like, oh, can you stay another hour? And I said, no, I got to be down the road. And so he said, well, if you go in that door over there, I can open this door on this side and the sun, the light would come in from the other side for just a little bit. And he said, I can't hold it open, but a couple of seconds. But if you want to see the paintings, just go in that other door on the other side and want and look this way. And I couldn't even, I was in there. I couldn't take my real camera because it made too much noise and patrons were in there watching the movie. And I took my cell phone and I made a 2-second exposure hand-holding it, and it's sharp.
That's amazing.
You know, I have so often told my students that they needed to use their real cameras. And now I'm saying to them, whatever you have with you is the best thing that you can use, you know?
Pretty much, yeah. As long as you can manually manipulate it so that it fulfills your
need. I could. And I had that ability on here because I have a slow shutter speed program on here. So I could do that.
Very clever. I was going to ask you, so I might as well ask it now. When you first started your project, what kind of camera did you use? You were using film at that point or digital?
I was using film and I had a Nikon F that I had bought used that had gone through Vietnam, had some dings and bangs on it. But I had bought that camera because I was trying to freelance at the local newspaper. And they all use Nikons. And if I had Nikons, I could borrow the equipment from the newspaper. And that's what I got. And then I just kept going with Nikons after that. And until I had rotator cuff surgery and I couldn't pick up the cameras because they were too heavy. And one of my students had bought a Olympus system. And he said, well, I'm going to be selling this soon. Why don't you just use it until you don't need it anymore? And I said, after 2 weeks, I said, how much are you selling it for? Because then I knew the camera. By 2 weeks, right. I knew the camera, you know, and I knew all the right. controls. So I was like, I don't need to learn 5 systems. I can use this.
Right. And of course, now you can just use your phone if you really wanted to. And there's other apps you can use to make it even more sophisticated. But that's a great way to do it. Now, the million-dollar question is, you have all these images and you have some history of each theater. Will there be a book? Will there be a museum? Will there be it on website and archives? Will you be donating them all to if there is such a place, the Academy of Lost Theaters, I mean, what are you going to do with all these images?
So I have photographed 1,100 theaters, and the images will be published in a book in the spring of 25. I just finished editing the last words for it, the last essays for it this weekend for the fourth time, but that's good. That's good. And the images will go in there, and we're still sorting that out a little bit, but it pretty much is laid out at this point. And then the images will go to two different places that I've designated, and maybe three, because they're digital now, because I have even my negatives I have scanned. So they will go to the Theater Historic Society of America, and probably the League of Historic Theaters, but the Theater Historic Society really keeps those archives. And then eventually they will go to the Smithsonian. But while I still want to publish them, I can't give them to the Smithsonian because they're given to the American people. But that is where they will go eventually. And I have that written down, that they will go there.
Do you think the theaters, now that you've visited so many, do you think the theaters represent a certain, I don't know if the word is landmark, a certain place in time might be better, in American culture or just culture in general, that you had that many theaters with those distinctive pieces of design and architecture?
It is an interesting period of time, but I think what I try to celebrate with my theaters that I choose to go to, because there's some I don't go to. Some of them are closed now. I sort of avoid those now. I stop once in a while, but it's too depressing for me. But if there's enough left that I can tell what the personality of it was, I do that. But the theaters represent the one place in American culture that I know of that no matter what your politics are, no matter what your religion are, and thank goodness now, no matter what your skin color is, you can enter those theaters and you can be with a group of people that are being entertained, that are feeling sympathy, empathy, joy, comedic acts. You can enjoy that with them in tandem and realize that you're part of a community and part of a group. And I hope we can never outgrow that, you know, or let that go, because it's the one place where I see where we can all gather. And that's what I'm trying to celebrate with these theater pictures, is that community is really important. I also hear that community when I go into the theaters. I'll hear people in line say, "Hey, Judy, how's your mom? Oh, she's not doing well. She just got out of the hospital. I'll be bringing you some food over next week." That's what we do. That's what we should be doing. We should be supporting our communities and the people that are in them. And I love that I get to see people that are just every color of the rainbow and every size, shape, and figure together in one place and enjoying each other as neighbors, even if they don't know them.
Have some theaters been saved due to your visits and you're maybe talking with locals or other people about the theater that you're taking the picture of and why you're taking the picture?
I don't know if they've been saved, but I've certainly have given a lot of them my photographs to use for archiving the theater, for promoting the theater, for sending it out for promotional uses or uses for nonprofit kind of work. Mm-hmm. I've done that for several theaters.
And when you make your plans, are you in the middle of making plans for the next series of visits?
Always. there's not a day that goes by that I'm not working on this.
Well, the reason I was thinking about it, how do you work out where, I guess there's, you theoretically could visit somewhere where you're not. That sounds silly for me to say it that way. But in other words, where you're located, you're not on the West Coast, as an example, but you could plan a trip to the West Coast and map out, for example, in California, Nevada, et cetera, areas to visit that have historic theaters. Mm-hmm. You just have to make that first trip by plane and then from there do the rest of it. Have you thought about doing that, not limiting it to the East Coast? Maybe that's the better way to phrase it.
So I have now made photographs in all 50 states.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right.
But there's always more.
There's always more.
I make it to all of them. I've made it to all the theaters. And California is kind of the one that's like kind of kicking me in the rear end right now that I want to get back to. I was able to go to Southern California and LA and some cities that were up above there. But I have not been up to several of the cities that are up further. And I would really like to hit those. And I think it's like Oakland and San Francisco and just a lot of other places that are up there. So that's kind of on my mind. And then I've only photographed one in the state of Nevada, and that just isn't enough. So I need to get back there.
What was the one that you took in Nevada?
So cool. I was at a conference in Las Vegas, and I had looked it up, and there was a theater there that I could walk to.
I know which one you're going to say. Is it the Hundred?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
But when I got there, there was like 6 foot, 7 foot fencing all the way around it. And there was a big bulldozer in there. And I thought, oh no, it's going to be torn down. It's going to be torn down. But I couldn't get in to photograph. I couldn't even get inside the thing. So I had to stick the camera up and do the aperture to where I could just go in between the chain link fence. And because I didn't want the bulldozer in it, I just photographed the top because it has that huge blade sign.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very sad that I couldn't get in there, but I thought, well, at least I got what I could of it. And then I looked it up last year and someone has bought that theater.
Correct.
And they're renovating it.
Right.
And
they're in the middle of it now. Yeah.
So I wrote to them and I said, oh, you're renovating the theater. Next time I get there, can I get in? And they were like, oh, you just they said it's not open yet, but you just tell us when you're coming and we'll get you in.
Yeah, that's great. Well, they have opened it up to members of the local community to visit and see what they've done because it's been there forever. So that's a great you're able to go come back and do it. Well, before I let you go, what do you think is the most impressive theater that you've experienced? Or is that a limiting question?
You know, what comes up in my Rolodex is always the last trip. But honestly, there's...
Wait a minute. You realize a lot of people don't know what a Rolodex is, but go ahead.
My brain. That's what my research assistant said. She's like, how do you remember these? But she'll say, where's this at? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's in... Fredericksburg, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, I'll just tell her... Yeah. I think the theaters that are the most impressive to me are the ones that people have put their heart into, and they might not be the biggest theaters and they might not be the fanciest. And those are beautiful. They're gorgeous. The Fifth Avenue in Seattle is unbelievable. The Michigan is incredible. The Chicago theater is incredible. Those are big city theaters. But most of the theaters that I photograph are not in big cities. They're in little tiny towns and cities. And there's, you know, that Lund Theater was just beautiful. It was just a sweet little theater in a town. Viborg was not big. The Llewellyn, Nebraska. We literally made a U-turn in the middle of the road. I didn't even have it on my list. And my husband saw it out of the corner of his eye as we're going 70 miles an hour, slammed on the brakes and turned around and said, there's a theater back there. It wasn't open, but it was still beautiful and they were taking care of it. And there's 300 people in that community. That's what matters to me, I think, is just that the theater still means something to the people that are there.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Benita Van Winkle, who, in addition to being a college professor of art, uses her free time to photograph and document old cinema theaters that are facing an uncertain future. For everything about Bonita, go to busybeestudio.com. That's busybeestudio.com. And Bonita, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so very much.
And join us every thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.